Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I'm so unbelievably tired.
Aw, what were you doing?
I can't even talk about it yet. I've spent day draining my social battery for this fucking show.
And we'll talk about all of it next week on the show.
Yeah.
But until then, fucking Jacob's here.
Yeah.
Whoa.
But you
purposely didn't interrupt us just so that, like, we were wrong when we told somebody that he'd interrupt us.
Yeah, because Jacob brought company today. Jacob, tell us who you brought.
So this is Owen. Originally, I was going to try to get one of my college classmates, Taylor, on here, but she's a little bit busy. But she was like, Owen's available for this upcoming production called Tall Green Plumber, a video game musical that she's going to be playing at the Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre. I believe tonight's the final dress rehearsal, and then tomorrow, September 10th.
You know the guest is supposed to tell us this shit, Jacob.
Yeah.
You acted like I was supposed to introduce this stuff. What the heck, man?
Ian Owens, how are you doing today?
I am wonderful. Thank you so much for having me on today.
So, since it's your job to tell us about the event that is going on, give us all the info. What is Tall Green Plumber? Give us the details on this thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, Tall Green Plumber is a project that my co-writer, Mike Vavzhinik, and I have been working on for the better part of 10 years now. It is a video game parody musical. It's very, very obvious what video game we're parodying. I mean, it's called Tall Green Plumber. The main characters are Alfredo and Linguini. So, I mean, you know, we take a lot of inspiration from Super Mario Brothers. The whole point when we started writing this musical is we wanted to write a story that felt really, really familiar to anyone who's played the games, but then kind of flip everything on its head and write a really original, unique story with the characters that, you know, we've been playing with since, what, the 80s or earlier, you know, whatever. So it's been a blast to write it, but it's a full musical. We actually have 21 original songs in it. It's like a 2 hour, and I mean, it's with intermission. It's like a 2 hour and 20 minute evening. I mean, it's a full length musical. It's pretty good too, I'd like to think.
Well, I mean, Ian, I mean, you were a writer, so I mean, like, you know, I feel, you know, that's a tad biased.
Well, I mean, you know.
All right, so so obviously, I mean, you know, our main hero is missing in this. The video or the description for the play says that it's four unlikely sidekicks. So who like, I mean, are these strictly, you know, Mario inspired characters, or is it were other video game characters like tossed in, or is it like, so who exactly are we going to be seeing on this musical?
Sure. Yeah. So the four sidekicks that we call them are, and I'll give you their names in the show. It's Linguini, it's Princess Lily, it's Broshi, and it's Frog. And you can
Broshi.
And it's great. Broshi's kind of just this, like, massive fanboy kind of stoner. No, he's like a stoner kind
of. Oh, that's even better.
Okay.
Hey, man.
Oh,
yeah,
great.
So
exactly.
Just so out of curiosity, me, like, cool.
how does Broshi look? I mean, like, are we talking, like, is this like a dinosaur suit guy, or is he more like along the lines of like what you were saying, like a stoner, like, or are we more like, you know, Shaggy from Scooby-Doo on this?
He's the theater that we're doing it at, it's a, you know, local theater, it's a smaller theater, so I don't know what the budget would be like if we ever went to hopefully we take this thing to places and we get big budgets and we can do whatever the heck we want. For this one, you know, we tried to be a little bit we had to be a little bit more cost conscious. So Broshy is actually wearing a soccer jersey, and I think he's actually number 420. So it's
naturally
sweet. Near that or 69.
Like exactly. I think we were debating between the two. So it's like a green soccer jersey. It just has bro in like black and white letters in the corner, and it's great.
So what was like? I mean, you said you were working on this for 10 years. Like, I'm assuming that's going to be off and on. But like, what was the inspiration behind this? I mean, like, what made you like want to be like, yes, I'm going to write a video game musical? Like, was it just like something like, oh, well, nobody's done this before, or was it just like, you know, what made you want to do it?
So it's a funny story. I was in my senior year in college. And I studied to be an engineer, but I minored, or I guess I technically came one class short of a minor in theater, just because I was sick of engineering classes. I just needed time to just go and enjoy some classes. So I was senior year, second semester, I took an intro to musical theater class, and one of the final projects was to take a piece of pop culture, and we were told to use like a movie or a book or a TV show and try to adapt it to a musical, just like on paper, like, oh, how would you do this? And I originally had another idea it was an awful idea. Actually, it was, have you ever seen the movie Rudy, like the football one at Notre
Dame?
I was like, I'm going to write a football musical, which is just the dumbest thing I've ever thought of. But
if it makes you feel better, there was a Rocky musical. I heard it got decent reviews, but still, I mean, football might happen so one day.
It really, maybe that's my next one. I don't know. But so the night before the project was due, I was like sitting in my room, and I lived in a fraternity house at the time. We could paint the walls however we wanted to. And my buddy and I actually painted an 8-foot-tall, 8-bit Mario on the wall. And I was just kind of looking at it. I'm like, what if I wrote a Mario musical? And that was kind of just the inspiration. And I stayed up all night, redid my whole paper, and said, I'm going to do it. And then a couple months later, pitched the idea to my buddy. And he's like, we should actually do this. This is a great idea. So we started writing it like late 2011. We wrote the first song for it, I think, which is crazy.
How has it evolved over the decade?
That's a great question. So my buddy was a few years younger than me. He went to Elizabethtown College. We made an agreement that we were going to, for his senior capstone project, because he did major in theater, we were going to do a staged reading of the first act of our musical. So we worked really hard, came up with a script, basically read and sang through the first act, and everyone involved was like, this is great, you guys got to continue on it. And then the project kind of died for about 3-4 years, just, you know, life kind of got in the way, unfortunately. But about 3 years ago, we called each other up and said, hey, let's go back, get working on it. We basically rewrote the first act, wrote the second act. I'll be honest, over since March of last year, during COVID, we put countless hours just working on it, just putting all of our downtime and aggression and, you know, just, you know, being cooped up, you know, get kind of let the creative juices flow a lot. So,
a lot happened in the past year.
Yeah. I think I said 21 songs. I want to say about half of them have been half of them didn't exist in March of last year.
he got the creative juices flowing then. Now was it always going to be, Mario focused, or like, was there ever like a time when like you would have like background characters, like cameos of like characters from other video games?
We were always pretty Mario focused. I will say the act two opener. I told you we changed the names of all the characters. So two of my favorite characters in the show are called the Clobber Bros. Really obvious who they are. But they in act two sing a song called "Let's Get Hammered, Bros." it's a bar song. Everybody who's in the background, they're dressed up like the different characters that you would see in Super Smash Brothers, because then we have a big fight and we actually make it look and feel like a Super Smash Brothers fight on the stage. So that's pretty fun to watch them do. In terms of other characters, we kept it pretty focused just on Super Mario Brothers, I'd say.
Interesting. So with the Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre, I've never actually been to that one, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So, like, how did they go about deciding, like, yes, this is going to be our return? Because from what I saw up on the website, like, you folks haven't put anything on since, I believe it's March of last year. So,
yeah.
So how did you decide, like, you know, this was going to be it? This is our triumphant return.
Yeah, so the artistic director here is a good friend of my co-writer, Mike, and I. His name's Scott. And we'd done a read-through, and Little Theater hosted us for that read-through about 2 years ago, just in the lobby, you know, nothing on stage, and just small group, just to help us understand where the script, you know, had its, you know, what flaws it had, where we needed work. And Scott loved it. Scott's a guy who used to do professional theater, so he's been kind of waiting in the wings to see when we were going to be close to finishing. And about a year ago, year and a half ago even, he reached out and said that he's already pitched it to the Little Theater board, and he wants to do this show. So, you know, at the time it was basically, we're just going to do it when we open. And he really thought that he thought that coming out of COVID and coming out of this whole thing with an original musical would be a really unique and exciting time to, you know, to do something like this. So that's kind of how it happened. It was kind of him pushing for it really hard and saying, hey, I trust and believe in you guys and think it'd be a really cool way to welcome people back to live theater.
I was going to say, I mean, that is pretty ballsy because, I mean, like, you know, you're trying to get everyone back into the theaters, and it's just like, do you either go with old standbys that, you know, will, like, everyone's comfortable with and all that other kind of stuff, or do you go with this, which, I'll be honest, I've never heard of a video game musical before outside of Japan. So, I mean, like, this is a pretty cool production, especially for something coming out of NEPA, Northeast PA, for... You know, all two of our
you
listeners
are such
who
a
are
dork,
not
Jacob.
You know,
NEPA.
Shut up.
You are such a dork.
You know what? You host a video game podcast. You're like, you're the king of dorks on this thing.
You're so. On the video game podcast.
Fair.
Dork.
But anyways, like, so yeah, I mean, as I said, I think that's a pretty ballsy and really cool thing to for you folks to do.
Right.
But yeah.
I was just gonna say, then that was one of the things he said to us was, you know, we could do, you know, Footloose or Chicago for the 33rd for the 40th time in the past, you know, decade, but maybe let's try something new, right?
Yeah, definitely. Now, is this like your first musical that you've ever is this the first one that has been seen to completion, like that you've done that has been staged, or like have you done other musicals before?
No, this is absolutely the first one. I've had ideas for other stuff in the past, but I've never done anything with them. This is the only one I've, you know, sat down at the computer, started writing a script, started writing songs for. So yeah, this is the only one in the portfolio at this point.
Okay, cool. Now, like, how accessible is something like this for like non video game playing audiences? Like, I mean, obviously, all of us who grew up with, like, you know, Nintendo and all that kind of stuff, we're obviously going to recognize these characters. How did you make it accessible for, like, you know, the people who are like 65 and older who will see anything that comes in, you know, the local community theater?
So. It's a really, I was thinking about it the other day and trying to describe how we do it. I haven't watched a show in a while. We almost did it like Family Guy, where the video game references and all that, it's kind of, I mean, some of it's somewhat integral to the story, but the story itself stands on its own. Yes, that's, you know, Bowser, you know, our version of Bowser kidnapping Princess Peach. And oh my God, that happens in every game, but it's, but a lot of the references and the jokes that, you know, the hardcore video gamers are going to come and love, they're not as integral to the plot, right? They're more they're kind of fan service-y a little bit, where it's like, oh yeah, I get that. Like, instead of saying thank God, one of the characters says, oh, thank Miyamoto. It's like little stuff, you know, little stuff like that. And I think that's really how we did it. And we tried to write a story that was going to, that was one of the things one of the goals we had going into it was we need, like, you know, gamers, that may not be a demographic that typically goes to the theater. So we were like, that's a cool demographic we could try to get there. But we also need to make sure the other people who normally go see the theater are going to come and be like, this is just great on its own. And the music, you know, so I think a lot of it's writing catchy music and having big harmonies and doing the big dance breaks and stuff and just having a generally good story to tell, right?
With you said dance breaks?
Oh, absolutely.
So, like, I mean, so aside from, like, the music side, there is, like, choreographed dancing in this?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right.
Otherwise, it'd just be an opera, Jacob.
Oh, that's right. Cole got me as the uncultured swine. Good point, Cole.
Cole jumping in just to shut Jacob the fuck down. I love it.
There you go.
Of course she does. That's what she does best.
I was just waiting for an opportunity to open up and say, Joe told us we couldn't ask hard-hitting questions, so I was going to ask why you weren't on Broadway yet.
Because Broadway's barely reopened, Cole.
No, I was just throwing that back in because Joe said it before the show, and then I like to throw in things that nobody understands the joke to, including Jacob, who forgot we had that conversation already, apparently.
Jacob's pretty drunk most of the time, I think.
You were just saying I was pretty, whatever.
I heard that, so. No, I think we would obviously, look, this is our first step. It's the first time I'll be honest, we're still tweaking things too. So Little Theater's been great because we can kind of work together as a partnership. You know, we don't have to pay them to do our show. They don't have to pay us. We're kind of like entering this as a partnership to get our show on its feet. And then we can see what works and what doesn't, you know, for real, you know, with the dancing. Does this song work? It's not, you know, the script, we've beaten that to death. We know what jokes are funny, what jokes stunk. Those jokes are no longer in it. So yeah, I mean, look, I don't have any intention of this being the last time this is staged.
That's what I wanted to hear.
Yeah, this
is good. What I was trying to get out of you.
The second we're done with this, my co-writer Mike and I said we're going to sit down, we're going to do one last little quick edit, and we're going to start trying to find professional theaters that are interested in doing it because we think we have a product that is going to appeal to a lot of people, and we think we have a good product too.
Go ahead, Cole.
Have you considered any ways to, like, put your show out there beyond just the theater experience for people who are distant?
Yes, actually, that's a great point. We are, and I'm going to confirm this with the theater, but the last time we talked, we're going to record every one of the shows. So it's only a 2-weekend run, so it's 6 shows. We're going to record all of them, and we're basically either going to take the best recording of the best individual show, or maybe we'll do some editing. And we're going to do a live stream, a quote unquote live stream event, even though it'll be a little bit later. And we'll probably, put out a link to it or we'll have the theater put out a link to it, charge, $5-10 just to, again, help the theater out. They were really gracious in letting us do this show and literally see a dream come to life. So yeah, there will absolutely be a live stream event at some point in the next, I would say month and a half.
That is awesome.
Yeah,
I was gonna say because
I'm down.
Gonna, yeah, me too. Because I mean, between kids and work, unfortunately, I personally am not going to be able to make it up for this show. Even though,
wow, some friend you are.
God, Jacob, you dick.
At least I'll be there for the live thing. But going back to how. The show is evolving and you're going to obviously do some revisions after this. Was there anything that, there was something that you were really working on and you wanted it to work in this, but it just wasn't feasible for this at this current point in time?
So I will say that there's one song in the show. It's called Princess Here I Come. If anyone's ever played any of like the NES or the SNES, Mario games, you're coming to a Mario, a Super Mario Brothers parody musical. At some point, you have to expect that there's going to be a side scrolling type scene where someone's battling through levels, right? I mean,
okay.
So we kind of thought, because we could have him fighting actually through levels. We thought, how cool would it be if we could come up with a way, like literally have him almost jog in place. and have stuff whizzing by him that he that like. And in this particular song, it's the Mario character who we call Alfredo. It's he kind of runs pretty much in place, and all the stuff goes past him. If we could do it at a professional theater with a big, big budget, that would be like an absolutely show-stealing, crazy technical number. It's a little tougher when you don't really have all, you know, that at your disposal. So it works really well here, and it's one of those things where you put on the, it's the suspension of disbelief in the audience, right? You just need to sit there and go, hey, I get what they're going for. This is cool. But I think that number, we wrote it and we realized it's probably not going to work at most community theaters, right?
Yeah, I get you on that, because as soon as you said side scrolling, I immediately thought of how in like old timey theaters, like when they were showing like a motion scene, specifically productions of like Uncle Tom's Cabin, like they would have like the background on this like kind of like a loop motor, it would be going around in the background, and like the characters would be jumping over the ice floes and stuff like that, which even though in the book it's literally like two paragraphs, you know, that was always like the big scene for all the old stage productions of it. And so I was just like, oh man, they could totally do that. Or like, you know, bigger production, you know, like a digital screen, which is what everyone's doing now. That's fantastic. I really enjoy that idea.
Yeah, it's really cool. We're doing what we can. We actually have cast members holding basically cutouts of like blocks and like, you know, question marks and like fake, you know, they're not Goombas, but they look you know, somewhat along the lines of them. And you know, and when, you know, Alfredo kicks them, they turn over, so they go from like the painted side to like a black side, and all the actors carrying the things are in, you know, all black costumes, so you don't really focus on them, you just focus on the other guy. So it gets the point across. It's really cool, it's fun to watch. But it's now, you know.
Now it's just like, now you mentioning that, like that was actually something I hadn't even considered. So like, how do you do I mean you just described like the shells and stuff like that. But like for the blocks, like, I mean, how we're so used to seeing like Mario like punch up from like one of the question blocks and like a mushroom pop out. Like, is there anything like that in the show?
Oh, yeah. In that number, he literally punches up on what looks like a question block, and the actor is actually holding two pieces, and he pushes like a star out from the top, or like a mushroom out from the top. And yeah, he doesn't eat it or anything, but it's still, you know, you get the point.
You know what really, it is, right?
Exactly.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. That's really cool, and that does show a lot of imagination and ingenuity with this. That's really just
find
fantastic.
A giant mushroom and make him eat it every time.
just a
giant one. Go to like the town fairs and find the biggest ones.
Tall Green Plumber, sponsored by Wegmans Produce Section.
That's fantastic.
So you mentioned there's going to be six showings of it. When are they, and what time, when can people check this out?
Yeah, so it is going on, it opens tomorrow night, which is September 10th, and it runs this weekend, so September 10th and 11th at 8 p.m. at night. It runs the 12th at 3 p.m., and then we do it all again next weekend, so it'll be the 17th of September at 8, 18th at 8 p.m., and the 19th at 3 p.m.
Nice. So if any of our listeners are in the NEPA area...
Whatever.
It just sounded gross. The more times y'all say it, the more gross that I get by. And I sound like this.
Yeah, true. That is very true. So, Cole, what kind of questions do you have? I know you're a huge Hamilton nut, so I figure you would have a lot of questions for this.
Well, it was funny because when he was talking about having the side-scrolling level, I was like, boy, y'all really need a turnstile in the middle of your stage because that would help a lot.
Absolutely, it would. Oh.
You would have been able to have done that, no problem, with a turnstile. What kind of costume design? I know you mentioned like the jersey and stuff, but what other kind of costume design have you gone into to really try to like bring these characters to life?
Yeah, that's a great point. Great question. So we talked to our costume designer between the director of the show, myself, and my co-writer. What we kind of told them was like, look, you know, we don't have a specific theme in mind, but if you think back to like the 8-bit games, you know, again, like a lot of the inspirations from NES and SNES, and a lot of the set designs based on the on Mario 64. But for costumes, what we cared more about was not what the costumes physically looked like. We cared about the colors. So, you know, the person playing Linguini, who is the Luigi character, like, he's got to be green, right? Whatever his costume is, like, green has to be the focal point. Princess Pear, who is obviously Princess Peach, you know, she's got to be pink. And, you know, Princess Lily, who's Daisy, has to be, like, the yellow and the brown. So we kind of just gave our costumer kind of free reign to pretty much do whatever she wanted. And but we just said, hey, just keep the – it's all about – for the main characters, just it's all about like what color they are and it, like the, what color the costume is, right? And it actually it's worked really, really well. Trying to think of some specifics, like the guy who plays a frog who is Toad, which is one of my least probably the least thing to know, but it's wonderful. He's just wearing like a blue like puffy vest. And he's got a little hat on that has just, it's a blue hat with red polka dots on it. And you know what? You know exactly who he is when you look at him, right?
Yeah. So you guys didn't go all the way in on like any makeup or anything in that regard. You just went costume wise?
Just costume for the most part. Yeah. Like, you know, they'll do stage makeup. And one of the things we thought about was, you know, Princess Pear. We're like, oh, should we make her a blonde? Should we make her a blonde? And then we thought about it more. We're like, no. The actress can have, you know, use their natural hair color, whatever hair color they have, and as long as she's wearing the pink dress, you're going to know who she's supposed to be, right? So it's pretty cool. I mean, you get who everybody is. I mean, if you're a gamer, it's going to be apparent very early on who everybody is, from just costumes, the dialogue, everything like that.
If you had one thing that you could go all in on with an unlimited budget as far as the show goes, what would it be?
If I can go all out on one thing.
One thing only.
I mean, all out on one thing. I mean, I probably put... So for
this
production...
Please don't say no hard hitters, huh?
Yeah, way to go. I told you no.
This is the tough shit now.
No hard ball.
Yeah, you're going to draw me out of my shell. You're going to deal with what I come up with.
I would say probably the biggest thing would be like set and tech. Stuff like that, like set, tech, and lighting. Because I think if you can, I know that's like three things, but I'm just going to call it one thing. Like if we had an unlimited budget for this one here, I built what pretty much looks like a castle on the stage here with my set team. It looks really cool. But if we went to a professional theater and they had thousands of dollars to just build a monster castle, you could just get that scale from, you know, even when you're playing Mario 64 and you're running up to the castle, that thing's like 50, you know, that thing's 150 times taller than you. Not that I want to make it that big, but between that, lighting, because between that and lighting, I think would be just huge. We have a lot of cool moments in the show. The characters sometimes pause the game and be really cool to like have really high tech lighting that totally like changes the way the scenes look. So I would say, yeah, set, lighting, if we could just pour a lot of money into that.
We'll really umbrella that under ambiance.
Ambiance.
That's fine. Yeah. Spectacle. There you go.
I'll allow it.
It slide.
Yeah. I'll allow that one.
I appreciate it.
So a question I like to ask everyone that comes on, when you're not working on Tall Green Plumber, what games are you playing?
Yeah, good question. It's been so long since I've sat down and enjoyed a game. So a couple of things. Whenever I've had issues like writing a song lyric or that, I've actually been playing a lot of Super Mario 3D All-Stars just to go back and play. Maybe it's inspiration, but sometimes they're just kind of fun to just go back and replay them. But in terms of other games, I finally picked up Jedi Fallen Order, and I've been playing through that a little bit here and there.
Good choice.
Great choice. Really fun one. The only one I'm really playing a lot is mostly when I just want to like space out and relax has been Stranded Deep.
Cole, you liked that one, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I played that one back when it came out. And then I completely forgot it existed because that's how fast it moves around here. You said Stranded Deep, and I was like, that sounds so familiar. And then Joe's like, you like that one. And, you know, I was like, Did
sure I did. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, why not? Sure, of course I did.
Yeah, like don't it. Go look that up. I don't remember if I liked it or not.
Yeah.
Carnage in chat wants to know if there are a lot of bad puns in the show, and if so, he wants an example, because he is the pun master.
There are certain scenes where it's just literally pun after pun after pun. So, for instance, we, very creative us, we named our main characters, instead of Mario and Luigi, they are Alfredo and Linguini. So at one point, Mario is fighting the Clobber Bros, and one of the Clobber Bros throws a hammer at him and says, you know, what does he say? I'm blanking on the spot here. Basically, we go back and forth with just pasta puns for like a minute straight. I'm trying to think of the line. It's she throws something at Mario and just says, like, I prefer marinara on my spaghetti. And he like catches the hammer and throws it back and is like, oh, not on my melted mozzarella. And he throws back and hits her in like the hits like the Clobber Bro in the stomach, and she goes like, oh, watch the meatballs. Just like really awful puns like that. There's an excessive amount of puns in the show. Especially when the Clobber Bros are on stage. Between the Clobber Bros and Alfredo, that's just like part of their shtick. It's the way we wrote them, just to constantly be saying just dumb shit like that.
Well, Carnage says he is sold. So when this goes live on the internet, we'll have to give everyone a link so they could check it out. I know we've been chatting for a little bit. Is there anything you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
I don't think so. I think it's an exciting thing. If you're a video game player, you've never seen a musical, and you've never really been interested in one, maybe this is the one for you. One of the main reasons we really thought this was a good opportunity was because if you think back to the old video games and even contemporary video games, you know, music's always been such a big part of them, right? If you start playing Super Mario, you know, the intro to World 1-1 on Super Mario Brothers, everybody knows what that's from. You know, you play the original Legend of Zelda music, you play Halo, like people know this music by heart. And it just seemed really weird that no one had ever put two and two together and said, hey, like we have a form of entertainment called musicals, and we have these, you know, video games that music is so integral to. Why don't we put the two together? So I think it's something maybe people hadn't thought about if you're just a gamer, hadn't done a lot of theater or seen a lot of theater, but it makes sense. And it's been pretty fulfilling to write it and bring that story to life. So I think that's what I got from that one.
Nice. Well, where can people keep up to date with you and what you're doing?
It's a great question. I am on Twitter. It's at Ian_Owens with two S's. Ian's IAN and Owens is OWENS. And then there's the second S there because I couldn't. Apparently, Ian_Owens had already existed at that point. And there is a Tall Green Plumber, the musical Facebook page. So you can come there and give that a like. We will be posting plenty of pictures and snippets of videos on there. And we will be sharing links to live streams. So definitely check out the Tall Green Plumber, the musical Facebook page. That'll be fantastic. And yeah, and then hopefully we have some exciting news in the future. And we're doing this professionally somewhere. Maybe New York, maybe Broadway. That would be a life dream.
Awesome. Well, when you hit Broadway, come back and say hi to us again.
Absolutely will.
Well, one more time, tell us, where can people watch this, and give us the sales pitch one last time.
All right. Thank you. So, yeah. So, Tall Green Plumber, the musical, it's a video game parody musical set in the Toadstool Kingdom. Familiar faces, names, characters. If you've ever watched Super Mario, or ever played Super Mario Brothers, you will absolutely have a blast being here and enjoying it. It's a hilarious show. It'll be at Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre starting on September 10th and 11th at 8 p.m. and running on September 12th at 3 p.m. and then the following weekend, the 17th and the 18th at 8 and the 19th at 3 p.m.
Awesome. Kick ass. It was a pleasure having you on the show. I look forward to checking it out when it goes digital. I'm not sure I could make it up to the theater. I'm still paranoid about the whole COVID thing going on. I look forward to when it hits digital platforms. I really want to check this out. I'm curious to see how you pull off a lot of the effects. And it sounds like a really fun show. And I look forward to hearing more about it when you hit Broadway.
Absolutely. Thank you so
much. Well, we will let you get going. Thank you so much for calling in. Do you have any final words before we let you go?
Nope. I think I got everything. Just really appreciate the opportunity to come on here and chat with you all. And I'll be in touch. Definitely get you guys a link once we get the live stream. And yeah, we'll be in touch.
All right. Have yourself a great night.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks, Ian.
Take care. Yeah. Bye-bye.
All right. That was good shit. I am definitely curious to check that out when it goes on digital. Jacob, I know you'll keep up to date on that, and you'll be able to post links and everything on the Twitters and on the Facebooks, because that's what you do now.
Yeah. You know, well, that and also, you know, be Cole's punching bag on Thursday nights.
So, who's up for some Sony news? A lot of Sony news. There was
disgust. Hold on. Whoa. What do you mean disgust? I mean, here's the thing. Like, I have no intention of ever getting a PlayStation 5. Like, and you know, because of that, I'll probably never play almost all of these games anyway. I'm not gonna lie. There was a lot of cool shit announced today.
There was a lot of cool shit announced.
Yeah. Like,
and some of it will show up on other platforms. I think the big thing that will not be hitting other platforms is Spider-Man 2 is coming from Insomniac.
Oh, I thought you were about to say God of War.
And Wolverine is coming from Insomniac.
Okay. At some point, yeah. I mean, those two I'm pretty stoked about. I mean, like, I've always been stoked about Wolverine games, and I have complete faith in Insomniac to get this shit correct.
I am excited to see what they could do with the property. Based on the little bit we've seen, I'm sure it'll be M-rated, which would be pretty cool.
At this point, what was the Wolverine Origins game? Was it actually just called Wolverine Origins?
I think so, yeah.
Way back in the day, yeah. That game proved that you could have an M-rated Wolverine game and mm-hmm. it would still rock, you know, everything.
And Insomniac are geniuses, so you know it's going to be a good game.
Yeah, that trailer was pretty cool. And also, I did like the little nod to Wolverine Origins when he's sitting at the bar, it's like on the right side of the bar, I believe. There's a license plate hanging there that says HLK 121, which for comic book nerds, Incredible Hulk number 121 is Wolverine's first appearance. So
fuck up.
Shut up.
Shut the fuck up.
He Googled that. He ain't know that on his own. He Googled it.
Oh, fuck you. No, I didn't.
No, he fucking knew that shit.
180.
Yeah. See, Joe is just like, he's that much of a loser. He would know that.
No. Everyone's going nuts over the God of War footage. It's not a new announcement, so I didn't really have that down. It looks incredible.
I like Dad Bod Thor.
Gran Turismo 7 launching March 4th on PS4 and PS5.
Always cool. I mean,
so I'm excited to see how that's going to stack up to Forza.
Jacob was wrong.
Excuse me?
It was the Incredible Hulk number 181, not 121. Jackass. I thought when you said it, I was like, that is not what I saw in the picture. And it wasn't, and I Googled it, and I'm right, and you're wrong. So I'm a better nerd than you, and I don't even like comic books.
Well, I know what's awesome? A fucking fruit fly just landed on my microphone, and I killed it.
I got one.
Motherfuckers, I hate them.
You know, you could get, like, a little bowl of, like, apple cider.
It doesn't vinegar. Work. It never it works. Not for me. It has never worked for me.
Why do you have fruit flies around your microphone?
Those fuckers just go where they want sometimes.
There's always just one. There's just always one flying around. You kill it, and then 10 minutes later, there's another one. I never see multiples. It's never like, oh, there's three of them over there. No, but it's just one. Assholes. Uncharted 4. Uncharted 4, A Thief's End, and Uncharted The Lost Legacy are getting remastered for PS5 and PC for early 2022.
Hey, I guess I might actually play them now.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Alan Wake Remastered is a thing, and it is coming to PS4 and PS5, PlayStation for the very first time. It will also be hitting Xbox Series X and S and Epic Game Store. And then the big, huge thing... Oh. What?
I was going to say, for Alan Wake, honestly, I'm hoping that with these remastered versions, I'm kind of hoping that they do like a slight, like a slightly easier way, so you can at least just enjoy the damn story. Because honestly, like those moments where, like, with the friggin' Duracell batteries or Energizer batteries, whatever the hell they were, like, and the save points, that was just too damn annoying for me, and so I never ended up finishing the first game.
We'll see if they address any of the quality of life stuff or what changes they make, but that's apparently not too far away. I think someone said October.
Yeah, it's like October, November, or something like that.
Yeah.
It's pretty damn close.
Carnage said the achievement list is already live, so there you go. October 5th.
Yeah.
October 5th. The big thing at the end of the show, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic is coming back. Exclusive to PS5.
I was real surprised by that announcement.
What the fuck, Aspyre? What'd you say, Jacob?
It's PS5 and PC.
PS5 and PC. They did stress it is a launch exclusive on PS5. So I'm sure it will eventually come to Switch and Xbox. But the whole Xbox exclusive becoming a PlayStation exclusive is stupid. Like, I'm getting so tired of exclusives on all sides. I'm just so tired of them. Oh.
I've said for a long time exclusives are bad all around.
Yeah.
Nobody listens to me, though.
Oh, man. I like what Microsoft has been doing with their, like, the Bethesda stuff. Like, the Quake remaster launched everywhere. That was pretty cool. Skyrim, the anniversary is going to be launching everywhere. That's pretty cool. So, I don't know. Aspyre, and stop this exclusive shit, really, please.
Maybe Sony waved them a bunch of money just to, like, make it exclusive for, like, 6 months or something.
I'm sure they did.
I mean, the way I view it is that it's just like, yeah, remastered? Or is it, how are they calling it?
I don't even remember.
Whatever it is. I mean, the thing is that it's just like, we've already got it. And it's just like, so what? So you're going to play it with slightly prettier graphics? Okay. I've got
Who knows? Maybe it's a ground-up remake. Who knows?
Maybe, but at the same time, I mean, we all still have the original. I mean, I'm pretty sure that was given to us for free from Xbox. And on top of it, you know, I've still got like 1,000-plus game backlog, not even including Game Pass Ultimate stuff. Like, I'll get to it when I friggin' get to it. Like... At this point, it's just like, well, it's a timed exclusive. Cool, because I wasn't going to be able to play it on day one anyway.
Yeah. Sony acquired FireSprite, the developers of The Persistence. So they have a new studio under their umbrella. The team was originally made up of former Sony Liverpool developers who were let go when Sony shut down their studio. So now they're back?
Yeah, that's awkward.
That doesn't seem like the smartest decision, to be fair.
You shut us down, and now you want us back. Okay.
Huh?
Oh, well, we'll see what happens. Good news from Sony is they reverse track on the Horizon Forbidden West upgrade. They will now offer a free upgrade to the game from PS4 to PS5, and they confirm that all future first-party games will have a $10 upgrade path. Smart delivery is still better, because it's smart delivery, and you don't have to pay for an upgrade. So, suck a dick. I just paying for upgrades is dumb, and I hate this trend of now people are releasing Xbox One and Xbox Series X versions of games and PS4 and PS5 versions of games, and you don't get them both with the purchase. You have to buy them separately. That is stupid.
The only time I don't care about that is if it's like a $5 Xtillion game and I'm buying it to stat gamer score anyway.
You just want those Xelon achievements.
I do.
PS5 has surpassed 1 million sales in Japan. That's pretty cool. That I believe that is the quickest to 1 million in Japan.
Okay. How? Where were the consoles this whole time?
They were hiding under someone's couch. I don't know. PlayStation Now is getting some new additions for September. They are getting Tekken 7 until February 28th. Windbound, Pathfinder Kingmaker Definitive Edition, Moonlighter, and then Final Fantasy VII, which is starting a chain of Final Fantasies, where Final Fantasy VIII is coming in October, 9 in November, 10 and 10-2 in December, and 12 in January.
Okay.
So PlayStation Now is getting a lot of Final Fantasy coming its way, right after they're off Game Pass. So
yeah,
they're jumping.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about Moonlighter too, because it recently left. I think it did.
Yeah, and then Killing Floor 2. From Tripwire.
Tripwire's had a rough ride lately.
Yeah.
Into the next story.
Yeah, that's yeah. Tripwire CEO John Gibson came out as a raging asshole this week after supporting Texas's new anti-abortion laws on Twitter. Companies quickly began distancing themselves from Tripwire, with Shipwright Studios canceling all of their contracts with the studio and Torn Banner Studios releasing a statement saying they oppose what John said. Tripwire eventually released a statement saying that John Gibson has been removed as CEO and they do not stand with his views. So that's a quick lesson on how to lose a job.
Yeah.
Well, you know, did he actually lose it though? Because the way that Tripwire made it sound, it almost sounded like one of those, he stepped down from it, but we haven't actually fired him. Like, we made him like guy who's in charge of the supply closet for 6 months until everyone forgot that this went away. Like,
until
they actually say that his ass is gone, I don't trust it.
The thing is, though, like, I don't think people are gonna forget who he is and what he's done. If you look into Killing Floor 2 at all, he did a song, wrote and sang the lyrics for a song that's on the soundtrack that the game turns the lyrics off on by default because they're so bad.
Oh dear.
From his Christian metal band. And it's an anti-abortion song.
What's this Christian metal band?
Dirge, I believe it. D-I-R-G-E.
Dirge? I don't know if I've ever heard of them.
Yeah, because they were together for like 8 years and did one song. The song on Killing Floor. Okay? So, like, I don't think anybody's gonna be like, you know, the guy from Tripwire Who in like 6 months. He's got a pretty solid legacy of being a dipshit.
Yeah.
The one thing I do worry about, though, and I'll just interrupt you for just a split second. They put the co-founder in his position, and it's like, okay, but they were friends and they co-founded the studio. Chances are good this guy's probably got the same views and he's just smart enough to not fucking put it on Twitter.
Yeah, most likely.
Well, that's on them, but at least he's not publicly a fucking dickhead.
Nah.
Call of Duty Warzone.
I fucking love Maneater.
Yeah, Maneater. I don't know. Already own Maneater, so it's not like we could just be like, fuck them. I'm never going to buy Maneater. I already own it. I'm not buying the DLC for it. Fuck them.
Yeah.
But I'll still play what DLC. I bought. I mean, I already paid money for it.
I wanted the DLC.
Yeah. Anyway. Well. Call of Duty Warzone is reportedly making over $5 million in revenue per day.
Damn.
Are you surprised?
Jesus.
A little bit, actually. Yeah.
No, I'm not surprised.
Redonk. Redonk. NIS announced Prinny Presents NIS Classics Volume 2 for Spring 2022 on the Switch. Tim Ekibus mentioned that he was hoping they would bring Makai Kingdom to the Switch with one of these collections, and they are. It includes Makai Kingdom Reclaimed and Rebound, as well as ZHP Unlosing Ranger versus Dark Death Evil Man, which was originally a PSP game. So they're bringing those two to the Switch next spring. So okay. NIS fans have good shit to look forward to. Then last bit of news I have is Tiny Tina's Wonderland was announced for release on March 25th for PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC. It was celebrated with a baller new trailer featuring Babby Metal.
Okay.
That's a good trailer.
Now, that's like the RPG game, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I remember that they announced like a physical RPG based on that stuff from Borderlands 2, but I didn't know if they had done anything else with it. So that's pretty cool.
I haven't paid any attention to a physical game. Maybe Purnell would know. I don't know. But Cole, what news do you have?
Call of Duty beta that everybody would get mad at me for talking about, so I'm not going to talk about it.
Cole, I get mad at you anyway just for existing, so go ahead.
Yeah, but listen to this delightful voice.
I'd rather not, but
go what's on. Going on with the beta? What's happening?
It's two weekends. PlayStation gets the first weekend because fucking of course they do. And it's a for them you have to pre-order for the first weekend. The second weekend is next weekend, the 13th, I want to say. Nope, the 16th, sorry. I don't know how to calendar. it's the 16th through the 20th, but the first 2 days on Xbox and PC is for the pre-order. So we only get, 2 days of open beta if you haven't pre-ordered it on Xbox and PC, whereas PlayStation gets, 6. So I hope you didn't want to play it. Anyway, four of the multiplayer maps, there's 20 in total, but only four are going to be available. It's going to have the new Champion Hill mode. Have fun with that. And, Activision is still in hot water, and they still suck, and they need to do better.
Cool. Jacob, what news do you have? And I hope it's not all fucking movie news.
Oh.
Man. Scratch it, delete it, throw it away.
Actually... Oh, actually, it's only, I only have one, actually.
I'm going to tell you the truth, but actually, let me for a second.
Shut up. Although that was a pretty good, impression right there. So I only have one bit of movie/TV news. Supposedly Sony is bringing back Twisted Metal. There will be, supposedly there's going to be a new game that's in the works right now because of the TV adaptation that is forthcoming. They want to have that coincide with it whenever that releases. I mean, whatever. I mean, the project got announced back in 2019, 2018, somewhere around there. So God only knows what actual state it's in, but maybe it's finally moving forward. Who knows? Anyways, that's the only movie TV news. I do have actual video game news.
Oh.
So Kingdoms of Amalur's new DLC, Fatesworn, is still coming, according to THQ Nordic, or sorry, Kaiko. They're the ones who announced it, not THQ Nordic. They shared one screenshot of it, and according to them, it's almost done. But
I thought it was supposed to be out over the summer.
COVID. Yeah, apparently. So
I'd rather it be good than early.
Right. So, I mean, I would too. But so apparently that's it. They've shown a screenshot of one of the in-game locations, and they're just saying it's still happening. So, hooray for that. China's new video gaming restrictions have already been circumvented. Kotaku reported that you can now go online and purchase people's accounts. So so if you're under 18, you can bypass that 3 hours a week, restriction that they had for the youths to be able to play their online games for everyone who's still addicted to crap. Mm-hmm. So of course they figured out a way around it within a week. And the final bit of news, which is something I'm incredibly excited about, because either way I win. So over at Sega, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Ryuta Udaya, who was the art director for both of the Jet Set Radio video games and also the game director for the first two Yakuza games, has returned to the company. And of course, there's a lot of discussion as to why is he back? Some people think that Sega is finally going to make a new Jet Set Radio game.
That would be
other
nice.
Other people think, yes, it would. I already got a chubby just thinking of it.
I'll say that.
too late. however, some people think that he's now going to take, he's going to helm the Yakuza series. after the series creator has left Sega to go over to NetEase. So some people think that Sega asked him to come back to work on that. So either way, you know, we're either getting new Jet Set Radio or new Yakuza. Either way, I win. So cool. I'm all about it.
Cool. Sounds good. Y'all ready for reviews?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Why not?
I just realized I never even went over the lineup with y'all. Jacob, you're going 2-4. Deal with it. First game to talk about tonight is The Artful Escape, developed by Beethoven and Dinosaur, published by Annapurna Interactive. Released September 9th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Windows 10, and Steam for $19.99. Also available as part of Xbox Game Pass. On the eve of his first performance, Francis Vendetti battles with the legacy of a dead folk legend and the cosmic wanderings of his own imagination. Francis, a teenager guitar prodigy, sets out on a psychedelic, multidimensional journey to inspire his stage persona. Cole, what's going on in The Artful Escape?
This game is unique. I had to say it because this is one of the rare instances where it's actually true. I would almost dare say that this is like a walking simulator with a little bit of rhythm game thrown in for good measure. It's very artsy fartsy, just over the top, bright colors. There are times when it's like a fucking acid trip. The concept, I don't know how I'm supposed to describe a game like this with words. Like, it's certainly a visual experience that you just have to be into. I will point out that if you do have seizures, don't play it in the dark while you're tired, because that's a problem. It's very flashy lights. There's a lot of color changes and some scenes that can really fuck with you. So I've been very careful to only play it during the day. Even though I've never had a seizure, I've had some like adverse effects to certain games. And this one would definitely do it if I wasn't careful. But it's fucking gorgeous. There was a scene where, without giving anything away, like you have to just basically walk along and strum your guitar and the environment around you changes in reaction to the music. Now, you don't have to worry about like trying to hit any certain beats or patterns or anything. It's all very casual. You literally just hold X and the character plays music. You don't have to worry about getting anything wrong. But if you're holding X while you're walking through certain environments, they'll react to the music. And so things will bloom or they'll light up. And there's a lot of neon. And there was a sequence where like these almost like marine type animals, but they were alien-ish, were kind of floating through the sky with these neon cityscapes on their back in this frozen mountainous area. And it was just, you just watch it and you're like, it's fucking gorgeous.
Nah, I don't think screenshots do this game justice.
They really don't. It is certainly something that you have to experience. There's no words to describe the way that it will strike you. And it's all wrapped around this really heartwarming story about, you know, living in the shadow of your family and never quite feeling like you can live up, or if you're artsy fartsy like me and you're familiar with the idea of imposter syndrome, always feeling like you're just waiting for everybody to figure out you're fucking it up, right? And they just think you're doing a good job. Those are the kind of like story themes that you're gonna find, and it handles them all delicately, but also realistically, and it's just really well put together. If I were to compare it to something else, I know I used the word unique, but if I were to compare it to something else gameplay-wise, I think I would probably say that it has little bits of vibes from like Oxenfree and After Party, but also it just, like, the character movement reminds me so much of a Zoink game. Like Flipping Death or Stick It to the Man, right? So it just has like this this really interesting vibe of how, like, you interact with the world. You can slide along these mountainous terrains or these sand dunes while strumming the guitar, and you're just sliding and strumming at the same time. But then you get to the bottom and you launch off and you do like a double jump and you do a special move to strum in the air, and it's so over the top dramatic, and yet it all just feels smooth. There are story beats where you have to actually, I did mention, like, it's a rhythm game almost. Rhythm doesn't feel like the right genre. It's almost like Simon Says instead. You ever play that game when we I won't say when we were kids because we're all old fucks that listen to this, right? when we were kids, you had that Simon game, and then, like, it would light up yellow, it would light up green. You had to touch it back in order.
Right up, you know, yellow, huh?
Yeah, I'm tired. I'm not hiding it tonight. Just deal with the redneck. But you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
Okay, so it's basically that concept, and that's how you have boss battles.
Hmm.
So you need to quote-unquote jam with these boss creatures, if you will, who are along your journey. And they will have somewhere on their body a series of lights that will interact when they make musical noises. So for the most part, it's usually like somewhere on the face or the eyes and forehead, and there's a very set pattern, so you can tell that you're supposed to hit the bumper. It's designed well enough that it fits into the world, but you can still look at it and go, oh yeah, I should hit the bumper, I should hit the left bumper, I should hit X, Y, or B. It's very straightforward. The colors match with what's on the controller versus the bumpers, of course. But again, they're curved and you can tell which one it should be. It's a really interesting way to have these boss battles. And I mentioned that it was casual and like it doesn't punish you. You can fuck up and fail and it'll just let you do it again. But even without failing, you can still kind of just mess up. Like, if there's no length of time that you have to hold a certain button, and there's, as long as you get the order right, it doesn't care how long it takes you. So you can play it. It just kind of frames it as like you're matching their tune, but you're playing it at your own speed.
No.
And so it's really forgiving and gives you a few seconds to sit and think about which button. You don't have to hit them super quickly. You can just, you know, get through it at your own pace. I really appreciated that because that makes the game more accessible for somebody like me who can't just sit and be like, mash, 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 mash. I was just able to sit there and go, you know, watch the pattern and then repeat it on my own time. I don't know if it's blatantly obvious yet, but I really fucking love this game. And I think everybody should play it. The only thing that I would particularly gripe about is that there's no saving indicator. I think they kind of mean for you to sit and play it in like one fell swoop. And I ain't got time for that. Sometimes I gotta stop and homeschool, y'all. It would have me worried to death every time I did have to stop, because it'd be like, you will lose any you will lose any progress. And I'm like, how much progress? How far has it been since I last saved? What do I need to do? It was kind of stressful. And then eventually I'd just be like, I don't have more time. I have to quit. And then I come back and I'm right back where I was. And I was like, then why did you warn me that I was losing shit? So I would like the save system to be a little more blatant. Either an icon in the corner. If you don't want to fuck up the hub with an icon in the corner, give me a save button on the menu just to make me feel better.
I honestly thought an icon in the corner was a mandatory thing.
I didn't see shit ever.
Well, it sounds like you enjoyed this one anyway. So $20 on the Artful Escape. What are you thinking?
I absolutely love it. I think everybody else will love it too, and they should all play it and love it.
Cool beans.
Because it's great. Yeah.
All right, next up is Super Slam Dunk Touchdown, developed and published by Tipping Goat, released August 27th on Xbox One for $14.99. Six players, all the sports, and none of the rules. Super Slam Dunk Touchdown, create a mashed-up team of players from completely different sports. Pass, punt, and punch your way to a sports victory in the sportsiest local multiplayer sports game ever. Jacob, sports it.
So, pretty much, if you listened to the interview that we had last time, when I first approached this game, I was just like, oh, so it's Calvin Ball, aka like the game that Calvin and Hobbes used to play in the cartoon strip, where it's just like, you know, they're playing baseball with a soccer ball, and, you know, the score is like Q to 147, yet somehow Hobbes is always winning and stuff like that because he hasn't rounded the bases and tossed, you know, the grenade in the hoop or something like that. It's along those lines. So you're given different sports characters that you can play as, such as basketball, soccer, hockey, roller derby. And that's just to start off with. You unlock more characters as you're going through the game. And with that, it's just there's multiple ways to score goals, such as getting it through the basketball hoop or getting it through the uprights for like the football uprights, or you know, scoring it in the soccer net, and it's just, and on top of it, you're playing with all sorts of different balls, which vary throughout
vary
the game
in weight, like, and bounce and everything. Oh my else God.
And the like, and the funny try, thing yeah and the funny thing
kicking
is
kicking a fucking bowling ball.
Yeah, so like there's or dribbling a bowling ball.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, yeah, there's bowling balls, tennis, hockey puck. I believe there is hockey puck, right?
Yeah.
I want to say it's right. Okay. I
have there's some cool hidden shit in there too.
Yeah. And it's just I'm not going to lie. When we first interviewed, I was very frustrated with the game because normally when I hop into a sports game, I only do like the training mode or even just like an exhibition game just so I get the handle of it before going into it. And so like I went in there feeling like I just like I didn't understand, like, I mean, like I got what the game was going for, but I just didn't understand how the game with no rules worked, which is a really weird sentence when you say it out loud. And so
yeah, you gotta go to adventure mode.
Well, the season or the season, however they call it. Yeah. And so, once you do that, the game actually has its own tutorial in there, which explains this is what you need to do. And it even allows you to do drills, which of course you unlock, and then, you could do those outside of the adventure mode and stuff like that. And it really helps you fine tune everything that you're doing. And once you get the idea of what the game is going for, it's a really freaking creative game. And it's a lot of fun. Like, it's chaotic as hell. Not only with the game itself, but in like the opponents that you're going up against. Cause like I had one game where I got absolutely creamed because I was, I had soccer players going up against hockey players. And guess who, you know, guess who won that match? Not me. but then the next game I had hockey guys going up against basketball guys, and we totally like creamed them. And so it's just like the game is all over the damn place. And some of the time it feels like you're winning because of luck of the draw. At the same time, the game has all sorts of these like little fun things that can happen. Like fights will break out if you've got the hockey guys on the floor. If you're playing on a hockey rink, you can get knocked out by the Zamboni, which finally happened to me today. Cause I know Cole was just like, oh yeah, that's the thing. And so that finally happened. And then it's just, there's a lot of fun things going with this game. And so, as I said, you know, it's a little frustrating at first, but in like, don't go at it like you would a normal sports game, because this is not a normal sports game. Obviously go into the season mode, like we just discussed, and the game will open up everything else. It will open up all of its secrets to you that way. It's a lot of fun, and I definitely recommend this. It's
cool. Cole, what are your thoughts?
It's a sports ball game, and I don't know how to sports ball, even when it's weird. Like, I did my best, but it still wasn't very good. My skill, not the game. I think the game is really creative, and it can be a lot of fun if you're into that sort of thing. I just particularly am not into that sort of thing.
That's okay. It's not for everyone.
Yeah.
I will say this. The targeting is a little odd, and I'm still getting used to it with certain stuff in terms of accuracy and how things should line up, because you're looking at 2D pixels. It's not like a straight 3D sports game where you're just like, oh, well, I'm aiming it this direction. It will go this direction. Because you have to consider what player are you using, what ball is being used, what kind of field is being used right now. There's a lot of considerations already going into, like, all right, well, if I hold, you know, the kick button or like the shoot button, how far is it going to fly when I do this? And so
I'm going to interrupt you for just a split second there. One of the things that I really wish this game had done was just have a little dotted line showing you the potential trajectory. It could have been a toggle for us bitches who couldn't tell, but it would have been really nice that there would have been.
There's a very short arrow that pops up, but they could definitely do something better.
Trajectory line would have been a huge help.
Yeah. Well, it's $15. What do you think?
$15. As I said, it's a little frustrating at first, but I think it's really worth it. I'm totally cheap ass. Jacob is totally cool with spending $15 on this game.
Cool. Cole?
Yeah, I think if you're into quirky sports ball, this is perfect for you, and you should pick it up right now. If you're not into sports, it's a harder sell. No. That's okay.
Overall, sports ball.
Bye.
All right. Yeah. Next game, Hindsight 2020, Wrath of the Rakshasa, developed and published by Triple I Games, released September 9th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, Switch, and PC for $14.99. Hindsight 2020, Wrath of the Rakshasa is a 3D third-person action RPG that allows you to fix your mistakes from past playthroughs and relive them for vastly different gameplay and story experiences. Your choices and actions have meaningful consequences that allow you to discover the power of your morality. Paul, tell us about your time with Hindsight 2020.
In hindsight, this game was not what I was expecting it to be.
What were you expecting?
Well, I thought it was going to be a little more action adventure, death doorsy kind of, but minus the souls-like aspect. And it is to an extent, but there's some elements to it that just don't fly. You have an option for every battle, and you can change it on the fly whenever you want just by pressing on the D-pad, but you can choose to be revengeful or merciful. So, you know, if you just go into a fight and choose violence, so be it, right? And you can murder everybody, or you can respect your heritage and actually, like, take mercy and not kill anybody while still defeating them. But the combat is both the strongest and the weakest fucking point of this game. And it was frustrating because I played, I'm not even going to lie, there are multiple story paths. You can make different choices, replay it, and get a completely different experience.
Different endings.
Yeah, so I took it, you know, I was like, fuck it, I don't have a shit ton of time to sit and struggle with it. I'm going to play on story mode. Even on story mode, your weapon, no matter which one you choose, only does damage every third and sixth hit. So you have to get a combo of three, and then you got to get a combo of six to do a second hit. Otherwise, you're just flailing.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of that. Especially against bosses, I would get hit, and then it would jump. And I'm like, motherfucker, I just wasted.
There's a combo counter in the bottom, and number one was watching me, and I was trying to explain like what was happening. And it was kind of hard to explain, but you could see it clearly on the screen. Like, I just sit and mash X at the exact same repeated intervals, and it would go 1-1-1-1-2-3, 1-1-1-1-2-3. And you're like, would you like to make up your mind as to whether or not this counts? It just seemed incredibly inconsistent, and I just don't understand why this was even a mechanic at all. If I swung and it hit, let it count. Just let me damage them.
No.
I don't understand. I really wanted to get soaked up into this game because the...
Hello?
Hello?
Paul?
Okay, so at least it's not me this time.
Oh, I bumped the mouse and accidentally muted. I don't know what the last thing I said either.
That was the best 30 seconds of this podcast ever.
Yeah, probably. What was the last thing that was heard?
I don't know. You were talking.
Okay, anyway, I was really super into the idea, but the combat just pissed me off and made it unenjoyable. I love that the main character is disabled. They have one arm, and that's fucking awesome. The way that the combat plays out, the animations for some of your combat moves are just so cool. And when it does the slow motion and you're whacking people with the stick and you're like, yeah. And then you go, oh yeah, but the 7 shots before that didn't hit them. And then you get mad about it again. So
yeah, I can see the frustration in this game. I ran into frustration of a different sort. I thought it was just too slow paced. It
was kind of slow too. When I was going like combat to combat, it was fine. But when you had to stop and do like sleuth out some of the puzzles, and the puzzles are not explained at all. There was one I sat there and like rearranged 17 times, and then I accidentally stepped on a plate and changed a block, and I was like, I'm a fucking idiot.
All I had to do
was change one block. But it just never, like, you don't run into that puzzle anytime prior. You don't run into the mechanic anytime prior. And it never explains that, hey, yeah, sometimes you can just step on a plate and change shit. Like, there's no build up to the puzzles. It's just, here it is. Good luck, dumbass.
My concern is more, I feel like the cinematics are way too drawn out. Like, yeah. The opening cinematic, I felt, was just way too... The camera pans, repeated camera pans, and then the giant long pan over the town. It's like, okay, can we speed it? Let me skip this. let me get to the meat of the game. It felt too slow, too drawn out.
The pace was too slow.
I couldn't do it.
The one character that's your best friend, I can't help but think that their face looks like a me. It's all I can see.
I see a
time.
Lot of like, Nintendo in the faces. I saw like a lot of Wind Waker in the faces.
And it was stressing me out. But I mean, like, the idea is there. There's definitely some quality of life shit that needs to go down. A little more polish and some QA could go a long way.
Well, it's $15. What are you thinking?
I'm going to go with a hesitant try it. Like, it's not the worst thing I've ever played, clearly. But it does really need some work. And if you're going to play it, you need to know that the malfunctions are certainly there.
No.
And whether or not they're going to affect you. Like, some people may not give a fuck about that third and sixth combo thing. No. Some people may like, oh yeah, a challenge. Me, I'm like, no, motherfucker, I swung and I want to hit. So, you know, that's, hey, if you are willing to tolerate that and have a good time with that, so be it. But I think the story is intriguing enough on its own.
Yeah, I can agree with you on that. I was honestly kind of surprised it was only $15. I actually had to double check my notes. I thought this would be like a $20 or $30 game. To see it down at $15, I think is really good. I think a lot more people will give it a try at that price. I'm comfortable giving it a try. I wish they would speed things up, give you the option to skip some cutscenes or speed them up. Or just let me quicken the pace.
Yeah.
All right. Next up is Alpha Set by Palgi, developed and published by Lightwood Games, released September 8th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $7.99. This new word puzzle is a mix of crosswords and Sudoku, challenging both your vocabulary and your deduction skills. There are 26 blank squares. Each letter of the alphabet must be placed exactly once in order to fill the grid with valid English words. Reveal a terrible joke each time you solve a puzzle. Jacob, tell us about Alpha Set by Paugi.
So this one I was pretty thrilled by because I usually don't get to review these games. Usually it's Chris and sometimes Cole gets to do these too, I believe. Yeah. Right, Cole? Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, so normally
Cole's just seething. It's like, I wanted this yep. one.
You dirty motherfucker.
sorry, Cole. anyway, so I was pretty thrilled that I get to try this one because this 2021 seems to be the year of Jacob trying out all these games that he normally doesn't get to do. And, you know, usually failing spectacularly at these. So this one is like a cross between like a crossword puzzle and Sudoku, as the description says. So with that, each letter from the bank, which, you know, is obviously A to Z, can only be used once within the puzzle, and you have to figure out like which words are being spelled out and stuff like that. And of course, it's a whole lot of trial and error. And most of the time, I start off looking at the puzzle, and I'm just like, "That's not even a real word. That's I don't understand how that's a word. That like nothing is going to fit in this thing. I don't believe you. Oh, it's the word rhombus. Okay, shit. All right, fine. That was an English word. And so, as I said, it's a lot of trial and error. The background music, there's really only like, I think one, maybe two tracks to it. So thankfully there is an option to turn off the background music if it starts getting to you. But this is not a game that like it's really a pick up and play kind of game. This is not something I would recommend like trying to burn through all 150 puzzles, through, but it's an interesting take and, I don't know what if I'd say it's the most relaxing puzzle game I've ever played, because there was definitely a lot of frustrating, like, I don't understand how this fits. Like, this is, like, there's no English language word that fits. Oh, okay, fine. Like, I understand now. And so I've solved a bunch of the puzzles with it. Thankfully, I haven't had to get help online, but it's like, you know, you're in for a challenge with this game. That's what I'm going to say. It's not the prettiest game. It's a very basic, user interface.
All the Lightwood games have that basic interface. And,
well, I wouldn't know, Joe. I don't get to play these.
Well, they're only $8 and we give them all buy it. So that's your own fucking fault.
I'm too busy buying people copies of MouseBot. So it's an interesting game. I mean, it feels kind of weird playing it on my Xbox. I don't know why, but I feel like this would probably work better on like the Switch handheld kind of thing.
It's already on Switch.
Well, yeah, I assume it is, yeah. But you know, I don't get to play these games, Joe. Anyway, but you know, it's not bad. It's not exactly my cup of tea, but it was it's a fun challenge. And it's an interesting challenge, especially, you know, as you're trying to figure out what words, you know, what word fits in there. And of course, you know, as you said, you get treated to a terrible joke at the end of each level.
Yep.
So you have 150 terrible jokes to look forward to, this game. So, that being said, you said this costs $8?
Yep, $7.99. What is your verdict?
If you're a fan of crossword puzzles or just puzzles in general, I mean, this is definitely worth the $8. If you don't have patience, I would not recommend this game, because this game is going to require a lot of patience on your end. So, that being said, for most people, I would say this might be like a try it kind of thing. But personally, I thought the game was fine. It's worth $8. I would personally recommend it.
Cool. Yeah, I bought it. I like it. I buy all the Paugi games because they're good, and I support developers, Jacob.
I wouldn't. Oh, yeah. I mean, I would, but...
All right, get the fuck out of here. You're done.
Oh, whoa.
What?
Whoa. I get final words, man. Because I brought... Because guess what?
What?
I'm not done with the news. I just found out about something that I didn't even know existed, and it makes me go, what? So apparently on Peacock, which is like NBC Universal / Comcast's like streaming service that I don't know anybody who actually subscribes to Peacock
me.
That doesn't already have Comcast as their cable provider. So, all right. So you are literally the one person I know that is just like, oh yeah, it's Peacock. I'm going to subscribe
to that. WWE Network.
Actually, yeah. As soon as you said me, I was just like, oh yeah, he's there for the WWE crap. There's a Frogger game show.
The fuck?
I had no idea about this thing. Apparently it's 3 episodes in. It looks like it's like kind of like a American Ninja Warrior ripoff kind of thing mixed with kind of like these sets have like a kind of like, I don't even know how to put it. Like, cause it's not like Legends of the Hidden Temple, but like they're trying to go with like a cityscape kind. So I guess it would be like
your last words are going way too long.
Shut up. So it's like an urban American Ninja Warrior game. So this is apparently a thing. You can view it on Peacock, and episodes are coming out every Thursday night. So, woo.
No, we're on Thursday night. Fuck that show. We're Thursday night. Go home, you're drunk.
I'm just going to start tuning in Frogger instead of coming on here to do reviews.
You know, oh, everyone will be happy.
Oh, yeah. No, it's just, Jacob, where are you? You've got 3 games to review. I'm watching Frogger, bitch.
Fair point. All right. Next game to talk about is Golf Club Wasteland, developed by Demagogue Studio, published by Untold Tales, released September 3rd on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $9.99. Human life is wiped out, and Earth is now a golf course for the ultra-rich. Try to sink the perfect shot in a dystopian wasteland while piecing together the fall of man through narrative exploration and a radio show broadcast from Mars. Cole, tell us about Golf Club Wasteland.
It is pretty much exactly what you describe. You basically have an apocalyptic level for each hole or course, I guess. I don't know how to talk about golf because I don't golf. But
this is more puzzle game than exactly golf. Yeah,
this is less golf, more puzzle, because you have this apocalyptic wasteland that serves as an obstacle course. So there will be a sand trap in the middle of an overpass that has collapsed, or there will be a stack of shipping containers that you'll hit the ball over and you think you're going to be fine, and then it's going to accidentally roll and land in a puddle and you're not fine. You got to do it all over again. Instead of necessarily trying to go for getting the best shot, you have to figure out ways to get around the obstacles that are in your way. There was one level where I had to hit the ball over several obstacles and then launch it into an elevator so that it would go up so that I could launch it into another room. It can get pretty complicated, and there are quite a few ways to approach each level. You could 100% get a hole in one. On some of them, it's a little more obvious how you would do that than on others. My favorite was the one where there was like this huge drain pipe that was broken, but it come right over top of a toilet, and the toilet was your hole. So the toilet's just sitting there with a little orange flag poked out of it, and number 3 giggled her ass off the whole time I played that level.
That's beautiful.
The goal was just, you know, hit the ball into that pipe and let it roll down, and boom, hole in one. There's also animals that can be in your way. There was a cow. I hit the ball to where I had to stand on the cow's back and hit off of it. That was an achievement. That was brilliant. There were giraffes that I saw. I don't want to spoil anything else, so I'm going to stop there.
There's fun sights, and
there really are.
There, I like how you mentioned there's multiple ways to approach some holes. I like finding shortcuts. An early level sees you having to climb over a whole bunch of steps to have a leap of faith down below, or you could just blast it through a fucking window.
Yeah. I love when you realize that something is destructible, because then it just changes your entire perception of the map and how you're going to approach that hole. It's really, really well done. Really creative. I'm saying creative instead of unique tonight. We'll be drinking over that instead.
Unique.
But I really appreciate the way that they designed this game. It looks really visually impressive. You can kind of tell that it's a product of whenever it was being developed, because there's a whole ass like level devoted to Covethi, which was the former guy's middle of the morning toilet.
Yeah, we remember that.
Fuck up. Nobody.
Let's not relive
it.
That.
That's like it. It was one of those moments where I was like, are they making fun of it or are they embracing it? I don't know how to accept this. Because it's full on in neon on a building behind you. But you know, the whole thing is, it's funny in some elements, but the actual story it's telling is kind of depressing, and it kind of hits you. You know, you're just casually busting out windows and getting holes in one and in a toilet, but you're listening to a radio being broadcasted from Mars about the collapse of society.
Yep. So how's that hole in one feel?
Yeah, it definitely like makes you kind of stop and go, I'm not celebrating quite the way I thought I would.
Well, $10 on Golf Club Wasteland. What are you thinking?
This is an easy buy it. I really liked it. I thought it was well done.
Cool beans. All right. Next up is The Last Show of Mr. Chartish, developed by Punk Notion, published by Hydra Games, released September 2nd on Xbox One for $9.99. Decades have passed, and the actress Ella returns to the abandoned theater to uncover a preserved collection of extraordinary performances. Explore a variety of magical hand-painted worlds as you collect the lost pieces of the past. Oh, what is The Last Show of Mr. Chartish?
So this is essentially a walking simulator, a walk-sploration, as we call them, with some mild puzzle elements thrown in for good measure. Nothing overwhelmingly difficult. Most of the time I would just kind of stumble upon the answer just by nature of exploring, and I would be like, oh yeah, that's definitely a thing I need to turn or something I need to pick up. It was very forgiving and just casual, and there wasn't anything that was like trying to jump out at you or scare you or chase you. It was like, no, take your time and learn the story of these two characters and the relationship that they shared and how, excuse me, I'm losing my voice. Allergies are getting me. And
Drew, you're just choked up because the store page for this game explicitly says unique experience.
It did, didn't it?
Yes, it does.
This was the one. Yeah, full on. It just like capital letters too. It was like, we know who this game is for, okay? but yeah, it's a really lovely 3D world. When you're reliving like the actual memories of I'm trying to think if it's okay to talk about it without spoiling it.
Don't risk it.
Yeah,
if it's something story sensitive, don't risk it.
Yeah, when you're reliving some of these performances. And you're actually in them and exploring, they really weigh on you, and they have a emotional effect. And part of it comes not just from the storytelling itself, but the atmosphere of the world being drawn down into this dreamlike state. This is one of those, like, you probably need to see a screenshot to know what I'm talking about, but like, it's not devoid of detail, but it's not overly detailed either for these memory sequences. And it just really adds a bit of punch to those that give the emotional side of it a little more weight with the scenery. But yeah, I really enjoyed this one as well. It was a good week for me.
Well, it's always good when you have a good week.
Yeah, and it's just like, sometimes you just need that casual kick your feet up and hear a story kind of game.
And they were all indies this week too.
They were.
No big titles this week. It was just all nice solid indies, and I like that.
Yeah.
And we have one more to talk about, but we'll get there in a minute. $10 on Chartish, what do you think?
I can't believe it's only $10. It's definitely a buy it.
Cool. All right. Well, we got one more game to talk about. We are going to get Dark Mika in here to chat with us. No. Yeah, we got to do it. You're going to have to put up with her. She's here. Aki, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Did you hear guys? Crash? Nope. I'm on a different computer this time.
Oh no.
That's why. Yeah, I'm at my parents' house. So. They needed pet sitting, so.
So how are you?
Me. I'm doing pretty good. I'm just playing video games.
Cool. And you are here to talk about Mech Mechanic Simulator. Yes, yeah? So you ready to dive into this?
Oh yeah.
All right, final game to talk about tonight is Mech Mechanic Simulator, developed by Console Labs, published by Playway, released September 2nd on Xbox One for $19.99. Mechs are our future. What happens when cars are no longer around? Gigantic robots take over. Powerful, destructive, and strong. They are used in sports, at war, and for you, they are moneymakers. Aki, what's going on in Mech Mechanic Simulator?
Okay, this is one of those, this is a first-person game where you literally take apart gigantic robots and fix the parts, clean the parts, you know, whatever, and get the machine working again to send off back to whoever gave it to you. It's just one of those chill games, kind of like, you know, Power Wash Simulator and all the PC building games, shit like that. It's just something chill to do for a little while at a time, preferably. You don't want to sit here and play this for too many hours in a row, or else you'll want to shoot yourself in the head. I know from personal experience, I played it like that for a little while. I was like, nah, this is not how this is supposed to be played. No. After I cut it down to like an hour and a half, I was like, okay, this is how it's supposed to be played. This is so much better.
So it's a game in chunks.
Yes. Each robot, you get a list from a few different companies that are just like, okay, we need you to repair this bot. And there's technically three companies and one illegal group that will send you robots. But on each one, it'll tell you how many parts need repaired. And then I'll say, it might also give you some optional objectives as well, like replace this part completely. Don't repair it, just replace it. Or we need an upgrade for the OS or a downgrade for the OS, things of that nature. And you just have to fulfill those. And upon fulfilling those things, you get extra money or money in general, because there are main objectives, which are always repair this part or replace this part because it's broken. And then you can get the optional stuff as well, which just gives you a lot more money, which you need. You need bad. You need so bad. Or you could break the game like I did, which is fun. But I'll go into that in a little bit.
Oh, God, what'd you do?
Well, there's actually an achievement for breaking the game. I just don't think they realized that you could break it quite as thoroughly as I did. See, when you repair a robot for a company, your reputation with them raises. When it raises, you're allowed to buy stocks in that company equal to your reputation rank, if you so desire. So let's say you have, you know, you've worked for one company and you fix like 8 robots and you have like 20 reputation with them. You can buy 20 stocks. Well, there's an achievement in the game for breaking it, and you buy however many stocks there is in that company that you can get, and then you make the company dislike you a little bit, so you have more stocks than you're supposed to have, and that breaks the game a little bit. However, if you and the way you do that is by not fulfilling the main objectives or by stealing parts from a machine and returning it. Well, I decided, because I was like, you know, I really want this achievement and I want money. So I decided to steal every part on the machine, literally all of them.
Oh my God.
And return the machine. And the game decided, okay, you lost reputation. And they also fined you, and it was like $900,000 or something like that, dollars, which was well over what I had. So I went into bankruptcy, and the game ended up giving me like over $2 billion because it overflowed so much. They're only supposed to give you $5,000 after you go bankrupt. They gave me $2 billion. I was like, all right, this works.
You done borked it.
Yeah. It's fantastic. My God. And some of you might be wondering, well, that's great and all, but how fantastic is that? I played that game. I fixed probably close to 100 robots for the various companies. I'd gained maybe 200,000 in that time, maybe in total. And that's it. Jeez. And yeah, it's very slow to get money. And at first, when you first start playing the game, you can't even repair parts. You just had to buy new parts and put them in. And as you get reputation from all these places, you unlock the ability to buy upgrades for your shop. And they all cost some money. Like, I think one of them was, the last one I just got, which isn't even the very last one even, was $150,000 for it. So it takes a long time to get the money to get these upgrades, but it doesn't take too long to get the upgrades themselves. And then one of the really fun things is later on in the game, you get a garage where you can buy space in it and you can build your own machines. And one of them costs like $400,000. Just for one of them. And I was like, and that's on top of the, I think it was 100 grand to buy the space for it.
Oh, gee.
So I was like, I'm real glad this gave me all that money.
I'm real glad I borked the game.
Yeah. So I was like, yes, this is good. So yeah, I'm not going to hurt for money anymore. Yay. If you play this legit, I am so sorry for you. You fucking putz. You'll be at it for hundreds of hours. There, lots of the achievements are cumulative things. They're like, oh, here, craft 100 pieces. Here, fix 100 wires. Fix 100 of this other thing. Fix like 1,000 robots total.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, and the thing about that one, which drives me nuts, is you can get contracts later on in the game as well, which is just a company saying, here, we will give you this much money, but you have to fix this many robots, and they're all consecutive. So far, all of them I've found have been 3 robots. So you have to do 3 of their robots in a row, and they don't change up, so it's just these are the 3 you're going to fix. And those don't count towards fixing the 1,000 robots.
What?
Yeah, those don't count for it. Why? Which is, I have no idea. I hate it. Because I was doing that for a good long while because they give you more money. I was like, okay, cool. This is going to get me real close to that. No.
Is there achievement tracking at least?
No.
Son of a bitch.
No. As a matter of fact, you can't even keep track of how many jobs you've done. There's no way to do that, and you have to do like 100 jobs as well. So, like, it doesn't show anything. Sadly, it drives me nuts.
More games need achievement tracking. Devs, make use of achievement tracking. It's there.
Yeah,
use it.
Yeah, very much.
Especially when you have stuff that's like do it 100 times.
Yeah. Please. Well, there's also an achievement for making $1,000,000.
Well, you already explained how to break that.
Yeah, that's the only reason I ever had that, or else I'd still be working on that. Lots of the achievements in the game are actually for fairly end-game stuff. Like, lots of it is for doing sending your own mechs out on specific types of missions. So, you know, you have to send it basically 10 times to these different types of missions you can do. And each one is 10 times. And you get an achievement for each one. And that's like, I think like 7 or 8 of the like 30 something achievements in the game right there. So yeah, lots of your achievements are when you get to garage and later.
Yes, well, it sounds like this is an enjoyable but unique experience.
Oh God, it's not unique. Let's just stop using that. I don't care if it's unique. It's not unique anymore. No, I don't want to hear that word ever again.
Creative.
Yeah, it's creative now.
$20 on Mech Mechanic Simulator. What are you thinking?
I like it, but lots of people are, unless you break the game, it's not going to be quite as enjoyable because it takes way too long to make money. Like, if you're playing this legit and you don't want to break it, then it's I don't know if you're going to have a great time with it.
Well, if you're worried about it, keep an eye on our Twitter, because we'll be doing a giveaway with Carnage and IDG probably in the next couple of weeks. So keep an eye on our Twitters and win it if you're worried.
Yay. And yes, IGT will work with you on that if you want.
All right. Well, that is it. We are done with this episode. Made it through. Finished. Finito. Big thanks to Ian Owens for coming on, chatting about Tall Green Plumber. That sounds really, really cool. I look forward to seeing that on digital. Cole, are you going to check that out when it hits digital?
Yep, as soon as it's available, where I don't have to go to another state in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know what this is. I feel bad.
Well, you should have been there at the beginning of the show. Whose fault is that?
Not mine.
Why not yours?
Because I was moving from place to place and getting things set up and helping my family pack. Hey, you knew I was going to be doing this.
I was moving. Well, you'll be here next week. Don't worry about that. We'll get you here next week. Big thanks again to Ian Owens for coming on. Thanks to Jacob for being here. Thanks to you two for being here. We're going to have more interviews in the next few episodes, so keep an eye on our episodes. We got some good shit coming up. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Steal everything from every mech you come across. It's more fun that way.
You're in for a scare.